Hello, I am Farha Khan. This is Prof Talk. For a number of reasons, some women need to be watched more closely during pregnancy. Perinatology, also called maternal-fetal medicine, is the field of obstetrics devoted to managing high-risk pregnancies. Today on Prof Talk, I have the pleasure of having clinical professor Dr. Gerald Marquette from the UBC Division of Maternal-Fetal Medicine. Dr. Marquette has an extraordinary background, and his career in perinatology spans many decades, where he has worked as a practicing physician caring for women with high-risk pregnancies, and as well he has taken a number of leadership roles within his clinical field and always with a strong presence at hospital, university, provincial, and national levels. He's currently the medical director for Perinatal Services BC. Dr. Marquette joins me now live in CITR. Jerry, welcome to Prof Talk.
Well, nice to be here.
So tell us about perinatology. It's considered to be one of the most rapidly evolving fields in medicine, especially in what concerns the fetus. Can you give us a brief definition of what perinatology is?
Well, you did mention it. I think you hit the nail on the head when you said high-risk obstetrics. Well, remember, maternity care is always concerned with two individuals, one mom and one unborn child. So it is a discipline devoted to diagnosis and management of high acuity problems during the pregnancy.
The mission statement for your division reads, to provide and promote the highest level of care to women with high-risk pregnancies and to their families in the pursuit of academic excellence. What does that mean to you?
Well, what we're trying to promote is evidence-based medicine. So to do this, we've used many facets through devoting time in clinical care, but also translational of new information through research into practice. We also teach at different levels, which includes, again, my stint doing problem-based learning in second year for a month now, for a month and a half. But at every level, so in the clinical years of med school, in the residency programs, and again, now in organized programs of maternal-fetal medicine here in Canada.
So perinatologists will see a number of complications. And so when we talk about, when we use the words high risk or complications in pregnancy, what are we really talking about? What happens to some women during their pregnancies?
Well, we tend to look at it in different grades. So if you're looking at level, a very normal situation, then if you want to look at it the purest way, a woman who's absolutely normal, have no problems in pregnancy, would have care from a midwife or a family physician, if you're looking at it that way. If there are some issues, then they may consult or be followed by an obstetrician-gynecologist. It's only when you get into more serious difficulties, especially in the diagnosis and treatments in the fetal area, but also in the diagnosis of exceptional medical conditions that can affect the pregnancy. Maternal-fetal medicine specialists tend to see the more earlier onset of problems and dealing with ethical issues of when does viability start and the edges of that, that kind of thing. Of course, if you're looking at term with certain complications, not serious, but could be life-threatening, our colleagues in obstetrics and gynecology deal with those on a regular basis.
So what kinds of complications? Can you give us some examples?
Well, we can say specifically the four most frequent things that we would see is preterm labor, preterm rupture of the membranes, where the bag of waters is broken and unfortunately the fluid is escapes, and that causes certain issues, especially if you're very premature. Growth restriction, in other words, babies that don't seem to be growing normally and to from any degree, but the most serious ones where babies tend not to grow much in utero, and those affected by hypertension and pregnancy.
Mm-hmm. And so how would women, when they're diagnosed with, say, one of these, what is the process? How are they treated and followed through, you know, for the remainder of their pregnancy? What kinds of things would they expect?
Well, what they want is figure out what they have and how to deal with it. So it's either joint care with a caregiver and a maternal fetal medicine consultant, or a transfer of care when things are a bit more serious. Give you an example. I have two of my colleagues who treat pregnancies complicated by specific twin pregnancies that are identical twins, and they share blood vessels at the levels of the placenta. And when I say share, it may mean not equally. So one baby is losing blood and the other one is gaining blood. So there's a situation of maybe chronic anemia in one baby and an overload in the blood system of the other. One tends to grow less because it has less blood content and not able to achieve as much oxygen in its circulation. But physically, the problem is fairly serious to the extreme, where we literally have to go inside the womb and laser vessels that communicate between these two to protect the smaller and larger twin. So those are very rare conditions for which only a few of us are trained to do so. But we can manage and diagnose them, and we allow certain of our subspecialists to deal with those. So those are those kinds of issues. The stage of pregnancy also makes a big difference. Although delivering below 30 weeks really is only about 1% of all deliveries we see in the province, where we have roughly 40,000 babies born every year, those represent the highest acuity of pregnancies in babies. So the attention paid to those is much greater. All the resources required to manage diagnostic and treatment, etc., are much, much more intense and much more costly. Although they represent a very small population, they're also very acute.
Mm-hmm. So essentially, as perinatologists, you work in close collaboration with other specialists, whether they're in medical genetics, neonatology, pediatric surgery. How can you sort of maybe elaborate on that relationship with, you know, all of these doctors, especially with the premature babies?
Well, as specialists in our field, we don't work in a vacuum. We require to work as a team. Diagnosis sometimes means having an expert geneticist tell us, well, this ultrasound represents an anomaly that could be diagnosed or treated in a certain way. We have other physicians that also are involved. Well, of course, we have colleagues in pediatrics and neonatologists, which are the equivalent of the MFMs for obstetrics, right? And we work closely to counsel couples about the ongoing issues. We work closely with internal medicine specialists when there are significant diseases that affect the mom and therefore could affect the pregnancy, and subspecialties of hematology and nephrology, diabetes and endocrinology. So though we work in a fairly large and extensive team, both for managing, counseling, treating, and diagnosing.
Now, when women are diagnosed and they're in a situation, whether they're, say, in an antepartum ward for a long period, it must be difficult in some ways for perinatologists to balance both the health of the growing fetus as well as the, you know, what the mother is going through. And so how do you as doctors deal with sort of that stress that can happen with a mother, you know, that's obviously concerned about her baby, but at the same time, you know, there are all these other risks involved in the sort of outcome of the delivery?
Well, what you're asking is terribly important. We've dealt with it in many ways. We also have reproductive psychiatrists that work intensely with us, because of course we have mums in hospitals. They're not with their families. Their families have been separated from a mum. The mum could be here, but their families are far away, which introduce a whole lot of all other social issues, financial and others. And you can only imagine when you're living in a very small quarter, which is a room in a hospital, that you get a bit cabin fever, and you need all sorts of other supports than the pure medical condition that you're in for. So the nursing staff is very sensitive to those issues, but we also have social workers who help arrange short-term visits outside the hospital, for instance, or help out with the burden of certain financial issues, help out finding an area to live close by the hospital that could be better than the actual staying in hospital at all times. There are unfortunately conditions which require to be in hospital until delivery, but they're becoming fewer because we're allowed also to have people go in a home setting and have trained nurses that work with us that actually go into that setting to perform the ongoing testing that we would need, but also connect at a level, a human level, which is terribly important to empower people and women to be able to understand what their condition is and how to deal with it, when to call us if they think there's any problem, etc. So that's worked well for individuals and families. But unfortunately, we still have a certain number of people that for whatever reason require the hospital setting. And it is very difficult. So all of those issues are dealt with allied healthcare providers, such as, obviously, we mentioned the nurses, the social workers, and whoever could be of help. We have Aboriginal liaisons. We have people who are in different religious organizations that come and support people. So we make a great effort to look at the whole situation.
It also must be stressful for the doctors themselves to be making these decisions, often very quickly or with, you know, as well, very risky situations, especially with what you mentioned, with when maybe the intervention might be needed before babies are born. So that must be difficult on...
I have to tell you, that's why I have a diverse career. I come from Montreal, and both my wife and I are perinatologists. And when we worked in Montreal, when we were on service or on call at night or the weekends, we took care of everybody in the labor suite, let's say. So we would have beautiful births that, and we'd witness that, and it was very rewarding. And here, because we have quite a few other colleagues, it's true that we end up taking care of only the very... acute situations, and we deal with morbid and sometimes more than morbid situations, and day in, day out, that could be difficult. So we tend to diversify and not allow people to go on and on in just taking care of the most acute. So clinically, we have offices in the hospital because we're hospital-based. We also do a lot of diagnostics, which are very interesting and rewarding, even though they're acute situations. So we do that. We tend to be part of research programs, and we teach at all levels. We do a considerable amount of administration also. So our careers are diverse that we don't only focus on only that aspect. And it helps every individual to have that kind of career.
What made you specifically go into perinatology?
Well, interesting. I started out as a young student, and really, in my distant family, nobody's a physician. I got other types of professionals, teachers, engineers, and lawyers. I was amazed because I took this rotation with our family doctor in Montreal, who did quite a bit of maternity care, half of his practice from maternity care, and he lived across the hospital. So because I was attached to his office and his program, he'd call me at night and say, "Are you interested in coming in and seeing a birth?" And I said, "Absolutely." And it really amazed me how he could do challenging things and marry that with his day job, so to speak, and take care of all the rest of the family, in other words. So I was enthused with that, and eventually went into obstetrics and gynecology. And again, I said to myself, I love this field. I love everything I can do. So I will become a general OBGYN, a clinical OBGYN, with very little involvement in academics. And in a way, that's not what happened. I ended up in a university teaching hospital and always teaching residents and medical students. And then I got amazed with that aspect. I always had some idea that I prefer perinatology, and eventually took an extra couple of months of training to decide that that was really what I wanted to do. So I quit general OBGYN about 3 years in and went to do a fellowship, which is a two-year program of extra training in that particular field. So it was a sort of a long decision-making process. Not that I'm saying I'm that slow, but it is sometimes a career decision, so I wasn't hasteful.
Tell us about your role as a clinical professor here at UBC. You've even won some teaching awards in the past as well. Do you find it really gratifying to teach the medical students and share your knowledge?
I really do, and it's really the encounters are very interesting because, again, I have to just open this little anecdote. We're trained as physicians. We're not trained as educators. Mm-hmm. And people assume that if you're a physician working in a teaching hospital, you should teach. Well, that's fine. You may want to, but it may not be the best thing you're able to do. So you actually have to learn how to teach, and it's not an unusual thing. So throughout my career, I took many, many not so short stints at learning how to educate people, evaluate, and giving feedback. And it's the brief encounters that are often the most rewarding for students. And that's where I got most of my brownie points and got these awards from the medical students. And they're awards sometimes that are national, which gives you a nice pat on the back for the effort you're doing, and just gives you that much more room to continue on. Mm-hmm. But it's not only at that level, the very junior level, but I enjoy every level of residency program, and of course I'm involved in subspecialty, and not only educating, but at establishing standards. I'm also in the leader for the exams in maternal fetal medicine here in Canada. So I get to not only set standards with many of my colleagues, but evaluate those through education and obviously, unfortunately, exams. But that's all part of education.
How do you balance so much?
Well, like you said, there's only 24 hours in a day, and hopefully when you get older, you get a little wiser and you're able to do that. And that's why I like sitting down today, because I just ran the 10K on the weekend with my wife, who runs much faster than I do, and my kids, who are way more in shape. But it keeps me in shape. Anyways, so yes, you do have to learn that. Initially, it was difficult, because in the times where I finished, physicians had to work 120 hours a week, or they were sissies, right? They weren't really doing a good job. And you have to understand that that's really not the goal. If you're working that much, you're probably not doing the best all around. And being up all night and trying to be your best the next day, many researchers will say your productivity is not very good. And so therefore, you have to learn how to do your best and balance all that. So an advantage of coming to BC was exactly that, was getting out of a setting where I thought I was getting overwhelmed with all sorts of issues and have a chance to renew that. And again, here the setting is I'm only a maternal fetal medicine expert, so I do not do general gynecology or general obstetrics anymore. And that was a choice. Sometimes I regret that, but they're a choice in life. So doing that, that's a good balance to focus. And then, of course, natural resources around Vancouver aren't bad, and the skiing's good, and the summers are great. So it's easy to have family life that way.
And before we leave, I just want you to tell us about your new role as medical director of perinatal services in BC. Yeah.
Well, perinatal services BC is a new program that is under the auspices of of BC Women's. That's where we report to, but also the provincial health authority. So therefore, it plays a provincial role in establishing guidelines on how maternity care should be offered throughout the province, not only tertiary care, but the most basic care, not only in high-ranking hospitals in the middle of Vancouver, but in more remote or rural areas, and to support that with offering guidelines and offering support. Now, it came out of a major review that was done 3.5 years ago that was sponsored by the Ministry of Health. And this review came out with a major consultative process with many recommendations. And one of those was trying to centralize issues such as maternity care to be able to offer a better spectrum and basically offering the highest level of care closest to home. Mm-hmm. So there are two medical directors. One is focused on maternity care and one is focused on neonatal care, because obviously we're hand in hand with this process. So I was offered this position as a part-time position, but again, gives me a varied career and another opportunity to meet a whole lot of care providers and touch base with them, trying to help with the maternity care in the province.
Well, you're doing fabulous work. It's been such a pleasure. Thank you for joining us today.
All my pleasure.
All right. You're listening to Prof Talk on UBC CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver and via live web streaming on CITR.ca. I've just been speaking with Dr. Gerald Marquette from the UBC Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology in the Maternal Fetal Health Division. If you'd like to learn more about his division, please visit www.obgyn.ubc.ca. Today's episode concludes our live programming for the semester. Over the summer, Prof Talk will air some of our best pre-recorded interviews from the past three seasons. Live programming will resume in September for the start of the 2011 academic year. If you'd like to hear a podcast of the show or any previous episode of Prof Talk, you can visit citr.ca or our website at proftalk.ubc.ca, and you can email us at prof.talk@ubc.ca. I'd like to end today's show with some music from Katie Lang. I am Farha Khan. It's been a great past two semesters. I look forward to chatting again in September 11. Thanks for listening. Take care.
There was a secret chord that David played, and it pleased the Lord. But you don't really care for music, do ya? Well, it goes like this: the fourth, the fifth, the minor.